Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are La Cucina, Drop, and Havoc.
I'm afraid it's a somewhat woeful story I have to tell today. The first movie I want to talk about, La Cucina, is really pretty good. The other two, I have to say, are not pretty good at all. Drop and Havoc really disappointed me. But let's start off with the one I like the most, which is La Cucina. As I often say, it's certainly not a great movie, but it's not a bad one. It is a Mexican-American co-production. It was written and directed by a filmmaker named Alonso Ruiz Palacios, and La Cucina means the kitchen, and this is in fact a movie that deals largely, although not entirely, with a kitchen in a restaurant. The restaurant is called The Grill, and it's somewhere in Times Square, and the kitchen is what they always call the back of the place, and the front of the place is where the people actually come and eat. We don't see much of that. We see a little bit, but mainly we see the kitchen and some areas around outside the restaurant. But the movie starts with someone who you might think is going to be the main character. In fact, she's one of the main characters. This is a movie which is well over 2 hours long, and it's kind of an ensemble production with all, you know, quite a number of characters who become very important at various points along the way. But the first one we see is a young woman named Estela. She has just arrived from Mexico in New York. She speaks almost no English at all. All she can do is ask people on the street, where is the grill? Where is the grill? Where is the grill? Also, when she starts to get nearer to the grill, who knows Pedro? Because it was Pedro who arranged for her to get a job at the grill if she shows up there. So now she's coming to get this job. It turns out when she gets there that Pedro is, he knows her and all that, but he isn't like some sort of a close friend, and he is hardly guaranteed all this. But she seems to feel that Pedro is the key to her future success in America. And in fact, things don't go badly. She gets a job in the kitchen, and she gets shown around a little bit, and she starts to meet some of the people there. And pretty soon, we drift away from her, and other people become very important characters. There's the guy who owns the restaurant, runs the restaurant. There are people who are sort of high-level staff, including the chef, who appears to be quite a tough and nasty guy. And then the other workers alongside Estela and alongside Pedro and the others. And along the way, we get to know these people to some extent. And various sort of crises happen along the way. At one point, one of the machines, one of the liquid machines, a soda machine, breaks, and all of a sudden there's water all over the floor, water or something from this machine. And people are now slogging through water. And as the restaurant opens, it's not open when the movie starts, things get incredibly busy and everybody is rushing and racing and trying to fill their orders and all that. And along the way, we have little dramas that take place. There are tensions among some of these people. In at least one case, there's outright hostility between some of these people. And of course, this is, as I said, a Mexican-American co-production. A lot of the workers in the restaurant are immigrants. And so that is something that is very timely nowadays, and it is something that is a very important theme of the movie. For one thing, the owner of the restaurant, at one point, is telling one of the workers, we're going to get your papers. We're going to document you. You're going to become a legal resident of the United States. We're going to work that out. And then later on, that poor guy discovers that the boss says this to people all the time, and he doesn't mean it, and he never actually does it. So things like that enter in, which again make this movie somewhat timely and give it a little extra edge of drama. There's also a slightly sort of a mystical or at least mysterious edge to the thing. Late in the film, we hear a strange story about a dream involving a mysterious green light, and the very end of the movie sort of plugs into that. So, it's an interesting movie, a lot of stuff going on. The problem with La Cocina is that it's really too ambitious for its own good. It has too many characters. All kinds of things happen in it. Little things mainly. One of the women, for example, a woman named Julia, is pregnant and she sneaks off at one point to get an abortion. And later on, she faints. So that becomes a sort of a subplot in the movie. And all the time, we're dealing with the tensions between the front of the restaurant, where the customers are, and where the real public face of the restaurant, and the back of the restaurant, which is apparently somewhere underground, where most of the characters that we deal with are involved. So it's a movie that can't quite chew, to use a restaurant type metaphor here. It can't quite chew all that it bites off. It's a little bit too ambitious, too many characters. Some incidents are interesting, other incidents are not especially interesting or not really followed up on, but all in all, I had a fairly good time watching La Cocina. I liked it better when it was starting off. It had a very confident feel to it. It's very well photographed. There's a lot of these long takes that are very fashionable nowadays, where the camera races around with the characters and there's no cutting from one shot to another. And then all of a sudden, we get a whole lot of cutting to close-ups of characters to feel more emotionally close to them. So it has that kind of fashionable feel to it in terms of the filmmaking. Overall, I would say it's an interesting movie. It certainly has a whole lot of diversity to it. The restaurant staff, the ones who we spend most of our time with, are mainly Hispanics, and some of them are Arabs. So again, there's another sort of source of tension and a little bit of uncomfortableness sometimes. And then, of course, there are a number of non-Hispanics, non-Arabs, a number of white people who are racing around and doing their jobs as well. So it's an interesting movie, an ambitious movie, a fast-paced movie. I can't just say that it ever quite caught fire from me. I think that Ruiz Palacio is an interesting filmmaker whom we very well might be hearing from some more, but I don't think La Cocina quite manages all the things that it accomplishes to do. So that's a movie about a restaurant. Now, how about another movie about a restaurant? A movie called Drop. This is a film which is directed by Christopher Landon, and it takes place in a restaurant which could not be more different from the restaurant that we see in La Cocina. Drop is a takes place in a restaurant which is so upscale, it's almost hard to believe how upscale it is. You have to walk through a sort of super fancy tunnel just to get from the reception area to the bar. That is how fancy it is. Now, the movie doesn't begin in the restaurant. The movie begins in a home. And the movie begins in a home where one of our main characters, a woman named Violet, is being violently assaulted by her husband. I mean violently. There is bloodshed. There is a gun. It's horrific. It is domestic abuse of the most horrifying kind. That's how the movie starts, with a real bang. Then all of a sudden, we're later on in time, and Violet, we find out, is a psychotherapist, and she's working with a woman who has suffered domestic abuse by Zoom or something like that. And now that's what Violet does for a living, apparently. But we find out that she is still very much affected by this horrible trauma that she herself went through. Now she is going to go on her first date since that horrible moment of her own domestic abuse and really just terrible, terrible thing. And she's nervous about it. She's nervous about it because it's a first date, and she's nervous about it because she's not sure how well she is going to be able to handle it. But she goes through with it. Her sister comes to take care of her little boy, and she goes to the restaurant, and she sits down, and she's waiting for her date. Eventually he shows up, and they start to have a very, very pleasant date until Violet starts getting messages on her phone. This is something which is like the AirDrop app. I think in the movie they call it DigiDrop. And she's getting messages all of a sudden on her phone. Now, this is a kind, we are informed, of message that can only come from someone who is in 50 feet of where she is. So somebody in this phenomenally upscale restaurant where she is on her first date with this guy she's never met before, somebody in the restaurant is sending her these messages, and these messages are beyond threatening. Somebody is in her home, and to prove it, photos arrive on her phone of the interior of her house right at that moment. And the messages say, if you don't do all the things that I now tell you to do, your little boy will die. So there is Violet, And there she is in the upscale restaurant, and there she is on a first date, and she's finding out that there is somebody in her home threatening her little boy if she doesn't follow instructions. Now, some of the instructions that she then starts to receive are sort of kind of small things, you know, don't change your table, go to the restroom now, things like that. And then they start to get a little bit more more threatening and obviously bad. For example, in the restaurant, she's told to open a certain towel dispenser, and in there, she finds a little vial of what is apparently poison. So something's going to go on here. And yes, later on, she starts to get instructions to carry out a murder within the restaurant. Now, all this time, she's on her first date. She herself is a former victim of horrible abuse within her home, and we come back to that every once in a while within the movie. Now she's on a first date, which she was nervous about anyway, and now she's getting these messages on her phone that something horrific is going on right back in her home, and if she tries to call the cops or if she tries to do anything about it, her little boy will be killed. Whoever is sending these horrible messages says, your phone has been cloned. I can see every single thing that you're doing on your phone. Do not contact the police. Do not contact the authorities. Do not do anything except follow my orders. She tries a couple of times to get messages to somebody who might be able to help her, but it doesn't work. And that is what this movie is about. Yes, it is a suspenseful film. You really don't know who is sending these messages. You really don't know what's going to happen. She seems to be really stuck in this horrific situation. So I had a good time watching Drop for quite a while. It's silly. And by the way, the psychology of it is preposterous. Here is this woman carrying on this first date and pretending to just be having casual conversations with this man she never met before. And all the time, this horrifying situation is going on. I think I would have crumbled whatever the messages on my phone told me. My gosh, how do you go on saying things like, well, tell me about how you first moved to New York, things like that, actually Chicago where they are. While this horrible thing is going on, your little boy is being horribly threatened somewhere. Well, anyway, I didn't find the psychology of the movie plausible for even one single second, but it was suspenseful. Who is sending these messages? When will we find out? Will this woman succeed in getting out of this horrifying situation? Then, I would say about the last 15 minutes of the movie, it totally falls apart. It seems that somebody, maybe the director of the film, maybe the writers of the film, maybe the producers, somebody said, well, wait a minute, there's not enough action in this movie. It's just people in a restaurant. So all of a sudden, action breaks out all over. There are chases. There are falls out the window. There are cop cars racing all over the place. It just gets totally ridiculous and preposterous and implausible. It's also one of these movies where somebody gets shot with a gun and then turns out to be perfectly okay. A little wound, that's all. So anyway, we do eventually find out who's sending the messages. The plot does eventually get resolved, but to my way of thinking, the resolution is utterly implausible and preposterous. So here's my advice. Go see Drop, stay for about an hour and 25 minutes, and then get the heck out of the theater because the movie really goes downhill from there. Speaking about action, our third movie today is called Havoc, and that's a good descriptive title for the movie, which was written and directed by Gareth Evans. This is a movie about, and it's one of these sort of high concept movies where you can describe what the movie's about in sort of like one sentence, a drug deal goes wrong. Okay, that's the setup. And the person in charge of trying to deal with this drug deal is played by Tom Hardy, a good actor. So there we have it. The drug deal turns out to have been a complicated one. There's a lot of people involved in it. The main cop of the story, played by Tom Hardy, has connections with some of the people who are involved in this horrible drug deal, which he is trying to crack. And that's the setup for the movie. Courageous cop, very daring, very bold, drug deal going wrong, horrible, murderous criminals all over the place. The trouble with Havoc, which I did not enjoy watching at all, is that it has so much violence, so much turbulence, so much over-the-top, in-your-face mayhem, that it just gets really wearing after a while. I understand that violence and mayhem and havoc have their place in the movies, but this movie is ridiculous. There are so many people shooting guns and stabbing each other and blowing things up and doing one horrific thing after another. So many car chases with cars careening in every possible direction all at the same time that it just becomes impossible to sustain interest in it, at least for me. So many people are shot and killed and murdered in this movie. I think people in other movies were shot and killed and murdered by some of the violence that goes on in this film. It's just ridiculous. It's a one-note movie. Now, yes, technically, it's very well done. Some of the acting is good, not only by Tom Hardy, but also by Timothy Olyphant and Forrest Whitaker and some of the people in tiny little parts. But I just found the whole thing, it just kind of wore me out just watching it. You can have just too much of too muchness. And after a while, Havoc gives you that. So yes, it's an accurately named movie. And if you want is a nonstop feast of violence and mayhem and craziness and over the top in your face, awful stuff, then by all means, go see Havoc. It will be your kind of movie. But for me, again, it just wore me out. After a while, I wanted the Havoc to just stop being quite so Havoc-filled. So that is my not very positive story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films La Cucina, Drop, and Havoc.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.